So thank you for joining us today for the Virtual Advising and Application Walkthrough webinar. This is the fourth in our series of webinars. My name is Mary Rothzeller, and I'm joined by my colleague Aphrodita Krasniqi. Aphrodita, do you want to say hi?
Sure. Hi, everyone, and welcome to our webinar today. Thank you for joining us.
Okay. And so, just to give you guys an idea of what to expect for the webinar today, we're going to give you a quick overview of the Fulbright program, the history of the program. We're going to talk about some eligibility essentials. We're going to do a demonstration of the catalog of awards. And we're going to briefly mention review criteria. And then I'll do an application walkthrough demo and talk about some tech issues you guys may have been having with the application and how to solve them. And then finally, we'll end with a question and answer period.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you, Meryl. Thank you for walking us through the agenda for today. And hi, everyone. Again, my name is Aphrodita Krasniqi. I'm the Outreach and Recruitment Officer here at IIE based in New York City. And I would like just to briefly talk about a little about the history of the program. The Fulbright program is one of the most prestigious international exchange programs. It was established in 1946 with the main goal to expand and strengthen the relationship between the people of the United States and citizens of the rest of the world. So when you put your project statement together and the project overall, just think about how you want to meet this overall goal of building mutual understanding and strengthening this relationship between the U.S. and other countries where you are applying to. The program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, or ECA, and it is administered by the Institute of International Education, Council for International Exchange of Scholars. We do the program in partnership also with the Fulbright commissions abroad, as well as U.S. embassies or posts whenever there is no commission. So they oversee the program once the scholars are selected and they travel abroad. They manage the program and help in any way they can to facilitate and make a wonderful experience for the scholars. So just to cover the eligibility for the U.S. Scholar Program, first of all, it's very important that the applicants meet the basic eligibility criteria. It is required to have a U.S. citizenship because, like we said earlier, you are expected to strengthen the relationship with other countries abroad, and you would be representing the United States. Basically, you are a cultural U.S. cultural ambassador when you go on a Fulbright U.S. Scholar program. The other requirements are degree as required by an award. Some awards require PhD or other terminal degrees, like MFA, for example, for the arts, is considered a terminal degree. So just pay close attention to the requirements for each specific award. And many awards in the Fulbright program are open also to applicants with a master's or professional or academic experience, depending on the award. So all of this you can find on the award descriptions. And later we will show you also on the catalog where you can find it. Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program is open to professionals and artists outside of academia, recognized professional standing and substantial accomplishments. So pay attention to this. Some awards welcome academics only, and some also welcome professionals as well. Every award is different. Some are offer teaching opportunities, so they also specify the teaching experience and the number of years. Sometimes they're very specific to what is the profile that they're looking for, so pay attention to that as well. As well as there are new policies on previous Fulbright Scholar grants, and a waiting period between grants. So if you received a Fulbright scholar program before, you have to wait 2 years. Basically, it's 2 years from the date when the last grant ended until the application time. So you have to pay close attention to that. So the next slide, we're going to talk about the selecting the right award, and that is a very important aspect when you apply for the U.S. Scholar Program. So once you have identified what is the right award for you, of course, we are open and we recommend applicants and we advise applicants on daily basis based on their background, interests, and expertise. But definitely, you can do this also on your own. You narrow your search by region, country, discipline. So pay attention to the discipline preferences listed in the award. Whenever you cannot find the specific discipline that you are interested to apply to, you can apply to the old discipline awards. We do offer the advanced search functions to search by degree requirements, professional profile, and grant activity. It is also important the relevance of the project to the country, and keep that in mind as you complete or pull together your application, because this question is very important when they review the application. Why is the host country interested in your project, and what will they benefit from it? So think of all these as you are putting together your application. Now we're going to demonstrate the catalog of the awards and show you how to navigate. That was just like previously a snapshot of how the award looks like. So you go to this website, CIES.org, and then the homepage of the, this is where you will find the catalog of awards. So you can select, like we discussed, by region, country, area, and discipline. So in you can search all awards. Let's say, for example, in Austria, we can start with, you want to know what's available in Austria for a particular discipline, we do have computer science, you see here, you will see all the disciplines, and let's say we just search for this, and then you can search for also the activity if you want to do teaching, or if you want to do a combination of teaching and research, or research only. All this information is important. The degree requirements underneath this is also there. You can see if PhD is required or not, the category, what is the category of this particular Fulbright award that you're interested to apply to, and then there is the professional profile that they're looking for, so whether it's open to academics only, as I mentioned earlier, whether it's a combination of they want both academics and also professionals outside of academia, and the invitation letter as well, because some awards require the letter of invitation, some are strongly preferred, then it's preferred, it's optional, and should not be sought. So I know we are 1 week away from the deadline. Just keep in mind the deadline is August 1st. At 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, so keep that in mind. And I know that many of you are still in the process of getting the letter of invitation whenever it's required. So sometimes when it's not required, you definitely should not be sought. You should not be seeking for the letter of invitation. So this is more or less for you to know. Let's search for this award that we indicated in Austria. See, we have these awards in computer science. And when you open it up, the first one, FH Dranum University of Applied Sciences grad visiting professor in computer science. See here on the grant activity, it describes everything, like they give a lot of information. On the right-hand side, the number of grants, how many people will be selected, the activity, it's a combination of research and teaching, the degree requirements, the application deadline, and we do have the program staff. So I'm responsible for helping you out. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out by email or phone. And on the other side, on the left-hand side, you will see all the information about the timing, how long is this grant, the date, the location, whether they offer the flex option, the discipline type, and all the other important information. Then when you scroll up, you see that we do have four tabs on each of the awards. Here you will find the award requirements, more information about the letter of invitation is optional in this case. You do not need to provide a letter of invitation unless you want to, which could make your application stronger. And then the language requirement, the applicant profile, what we're looking for, and additional qualification information. As well as we do offer for this particular award the contact person in Austria, who you can reach out to if you have any specific question. The contact person is Brigitte Hennadi. She is the head of international relations at the University of Jana. So you want to also pay attention to this. Whenever you have the contact listed for the university, for the host institution, feel free to reach out to them as soon as possible, because at this point we are aware it's a 1 week away. Then the third tab, you will find information about the award benefits, what you would be getting. See, it's a stipend of 5,000 euros per month, which is quite generous compared to some other countries, and Austria, as we know, is a very expensive city to live in. Then the last tab, the fourth tab, is the country area overview. So you will find here all the general information and more contact information for Dr. Suzanne Hampshire, who is also the program officer at the Fulbright Commission in Austria. So this is just more or less for you to have an idea. But if we scroll up on the right-hand corner of the award, you will find, see this orange button, is will take you to the application, which Meryl is going to show us later on. And then before you decide to apply, you want to check the application guidelines. When you click this, it will take you instantly to the checklist of everything you need to do for a specific award, whether it's teaching only, research only, a combination of both, and professional project teaching awards. So this is a checklist, very helpful checklist, and shows you all the components that you need to complete in order for you to have a complete application by August 1st deadline. And then the application, Meryl is going to show us later about how to navigate that. So, once you know more or less now how to navigate the catalog of awards and you focus now on the review criteria for the teaching awards, peer review, which is consisted of previous Fulbrighters, they're going to look for if you are a good match in academic, professional, or artistic expertise to the award. So pay attention to what they're requiring on the award description and see if you are a good match and if you are also outlining these on your project. Teaching ability and requisite experience. So they many times they specify what are the how many years of teaching experience you have? So the teaching ability also can be when you have a recommender. I always recommend people to get a letter of reference from a person who can attest about your teaching ability. So they want to see that too. Quality and feasibility. So whether your project is feasible, can be accomplished. and whether you have the resources to accomplish your project. The outcomes are very important, and potential impact and benefits. So what is the overall benefit from your host institution and home institution, and also professionally, how will this help you in the in your career? For the research awards, they're looking for intellectual merit, so suitability and feasibility, again, of the project, whether this is something that can be doable in that particular country and whether you have the support and resources from the host institution. Need for residence in the host country. So why it has to be done in a particular country, in, let's say, in Germany or in France, can this research be done in U.S.? Why do you need to go there and do this research work? Evidence of host institution interest and affiliation. So usually, this typically, this would be emphasized in the letter of invitation. And they would emphasize on the letter of invitation your projects and what do you plan to accomplish and their benefits from your research work. And again, you know, highlighting the outcomes, potential impact, and benefits, like in the long term, how will this impact your professional work, or how will this advance this discipline where you're doing the research. So we can talk a little bit about also application components, and very important, remember we showed you the checklist that you can find on the award, so this is what we were talking about. The application form is an online form that you need to fill out, and project statement is a document that you need to upload. And this is 3 to 5 pages long, and it has to be concise, it has to be compelling, and here you need to address these questions. Why is it this important? How do you plan to achieve this? And what will you benefit from this? So it has to be very clear and addressing all these WH questions, as we call them. Your resume should be tailored per the award that you're applying to. So highlight all the experience you have that would that they would consider you a good match for this particular award. Course outlines or syllabi for teaching awards only. So this is where you need to provide a syllabi for this particular course you're applying to teach. You can use a syllabi that you used in the U.S. previously, but you want to tailor it a little bit in consultation with your host. You want to adjust it to the needs of the host institution abroad. Select bibliography for research awards. Again, you want to show a list of research that you plan to use for this particular research that you're planning to apply to. Letters of reference. We require 3 letters of references, and in the application we'll show you where to how you can register them. So one at least to attest your teaching ability if you're applying for a teaching award, one for the research to attest your research also experience, and then if you have an international recommender, definitely ask them to write a letter, and if you've lived abroad, even better, because that shows how you can adjust to living abroad and living in new environments. Additional components, depending on award, the language proficiency report, and some awards require this, some awards don't require, so when it's not required, you don't need to fill it out. But when it is required, you need to, an external evaluator, which you need to register the same as you register the recommenders for your letters of references. So they will submit this all separately, and you will not see them. But you can track them on the application whether they have submitted them or not. Letter of invitation, again, it's very important. Like we said, for some awards that they require the letter of invitation, this shows that the host is interested in you and that you definitely will have an impact on this host institution and also on your home institution later on, but the letter should emphasize that it should be written by the person who has the authority to invite you, and it should be signed by them and on their letterhead. They can just scan it and send it to you by email, and then you will upload it also by the August 1st deadline. So supplemental materials for applicants in the arts, architecture, writing, and journalism. So there's a special component for the supplemental materials. You just need to pay attention to closely to what is required. We do have a specific requirement, whether it's a video, it's a PDF, or audio file. So just follow those and let us know if you have any difficulties in uploading them.
And thanks for the overview of those application components, AfroData. I think right now is a really good time for us to pause and answer some of the questions that you guys have written in, specifically concerning these application components. So one person asked, for the syllabi, can I submit the syllabi used by the host institution for the course that I'm going to teach? You should not do that. So the syllabi are supposed to give the application reviewers a sense of who you are as a professor. What's your teaching style like, and what's your teaching philosophy? So it's okay if the syllabi that you submit don't directly speak to the courses that you're proposing, because really the focus and the purpose of them is to actually demonstrate who you are as a professor. That being said, there are about a handful of awards within the catalog of awards that do have some specific requirements about the syllabi. However, if that is the case for the award, it's going to be something in the award details section for that award. So just be sure to read that catalog entry for the specific award that you're applying to double check about the syllabi. Another question that we have is about the project statement. And a couple people have asked, do I need to number my answers to the project statement guidelines? So do I show the question and then answer it? You can structure the project statement however you'd like. If you'd like it to be a narrative, you can do that. If you'd like it to be a list and kind of bullet pointed out, that's fine too. We get applications from all different disciplines, all different types of scholars with all different types of experiences. And so we're not trying to limit you in expressing how you'd like to express your project. If you do it via list, that's okay. If you'd rather do it as a long narrative, that's okay too. As long as you're answering those questions somehow within your project statement, that's what we really want. So somebody else asked, what is the difference between letters of reference and letters of invitation? So letters of invitation are non-binding agreements or invitations from the host university telling you basically that they are inviting you to the university. They have a space for you, they are interested in your project and the discipline and the research work that you're doing, and they would like to offer you space at that university for the following year or semester. This is a non-binding letter, so there's no requirement that the host honor this. It's possible that a host institution could give out multiple letters of invitation to applicants. However, it's something really that you can use in your application to show application reviewers that you've done your homework, that the host institution knows who you are, and that they're interested in you. So think of it more as an expression of interest from the host institution. Letters of reference are going to be your tradition, the way you traditionally think of letters of reference. These are going to be from people that know you, that have worked with you, and that are going to be able to vouch for you professionally and personally as why you'd be a successful Fulbrighter and to how that you can actually complete this project. Another great question we had is, how many syllabi should you be submitting? So you can submit 2 or 3 syllabi. If you submit 1 syllabus, we're probably going to email you during tech review and tell you we need 2. So don't just submit one, make sure to submit either two or three. That being said, we understand we're only giving you 10 pages total for this syllabi attachment. So it makes sense to have to maybe cut down some of the syllabi, edit them a little bit, and just add a little note in the footer or in the header about just saying, I cut this for brevity. A little note like that for the peer reviewers will make it make sense. You know, having the honor pledge or any paragraphs about plagiarism, things like that you can probably cut out. They really just want to see the substance. What type of coursework are you proposing? Are you teaching lecture heavy? Are you group work heavy? How does your classroom run, basically? That's what we want to see in the syllabi. All right, so somebody was asking about formatting. And so all of this kind of information I want to show you on the website where you'll be able to see that is going to be on a web page. So if we go, we can navigate to it here, application guidelines. And we can just use the teaching awards. That'll be okay. And then project statement guidance. So this is going to be where you'll find specific page numbers and limits, information about 1-inch margins. Somebody wrote in and asked if I put page numbers in my project statement, which we love page numbers. Page numbers help us out a lot. So that's just a good tip. If you can include page numbers in your application for each attachment, that is very helpful to us when we review your application. But do page numbers need to be within that 1-inch margin? You can put the page numbers wherever on your application if you want to put them at the top or the bottom. They don't need to be inside or outside of that 1-inch margin. However you traditionally add page numbers is fine. And then, let's see. So another question we had is, what advice do I give my recommenders about what to write? So there's another link on our website in this application guidelines section specifically for referees. So if you go right here, there's this whole section on advice about the referees and when references here. So what you'll have to do is invite referees on the application, and I'll show you how to do that in a little bit. And once they have that, it'll open to an application system for them to submit their letter for you. Now, tips about what they should be writing and who they should be will all be down here. Okay. All right, and let's look at any questions that you guys have typed in and see. How many references should be included in my bibliography? So if we go back here, go up to teaching, scroll down here. So bibliographies are only for research projects, so we won't find it in the teaching section, but we will find it in the research section. So if we go down here, go to bibliography advice, and scroll down. And so a bibliography should not exceed 3 pages. So however many references you can fit in those 3 pages, proving that it is still legible, you may add. And a couple people have also asked about, do I submit text sources in their native language or do I translate them to English? Typically a good thing to think about is that the people that are reading your application may or may not be fluent in the language of whatever country you're looking to go to. There's program staff like us that'll be reading your application. There are discipline reviewers that'll be reading your application, and those are people that are maybe experts in your field, but not necessarily within that specific country. So they might not be able to read Mandarin or read Arabic. And so translating sources like that, where the characters are going to be completely different, is definitely a good suggestion. Even with languages like Spanish or German, it might be a good idea to offer the translated text title instead. We'll get a good sense of who you are and what your language fluency level is in your project statement, and also if you submit a language evaluation. And so don't worry too much about whether or not the reviewers are going to think that it was either bad or a good thing if you translated the title. Let's see. So anytime you're looking for page limit requirements, and minimums, maximums, those are all going to be found in this application guidelines section of our website. Okay. Somebody asked about the personal statement. Should I include such personal details about my heritage or ancestors, and that's why I'm also attracted to that country? Sure. It's okay to have a personal interest in the country aside from just a professional and project centered focus on the country. It makes you human. It's okay to show that, you know, maybe if you've learned from stories from your grandparents about a country but you've never been there and that's sparking your interest, that's great to mention. It adds a bit of humility to your project as well. Somebody had also mentioned that they were looking to reapply as a previous Fulbrighter, which is something that you can do. Now, when you reapply in your project statement, you do have to address why you should be receiving another Fulbright. And the justification for that can vary. It could be, you know, you went on a Fulbright 10 years ago and you were at a totally different place in your career. You were doing maybe a postdoc grant, but now you're looking for a more distinguished grant. And so you're looking to do much more elevated, higher level research. You could be going to a totally different country. So maybe you were in Bhutan the first time around, but now you're looking at going to Peru. That's going to be an easy case as far as you justifying why you'd like a Fulbright again, because you're looking at a different project, a different region. So it's not like you're going over to the same country, to the same school, to do the exact same thing with the same results. Do the bibliography and syllabi need to be connected? No. So bibliographies are something that you're only going to include if there's a research activity. Syllabi are only going to be included if there's some sort of teaching activity on your grant. You don't need, if you cite references in your syllabi or in your bibliography, they don't need to be cited in the other out of default. If the bibliography should address current topics and publications and research on the topic that you're looking to propose, syllabi, again, are just about teaching philosophy and your teaching style. All right. Let's see. So I think now is a good time for me to go on and show you guys the application. So if you have not already started an application, please do so. Even if you are not ready to completely submit, it's a good idea for you to go on and just register in the system and start that application. So I will show you guys how to do that now. There's also, if you have more questions or would like a more in-depth walkthrough of the application, we did record a webinar previously that's on our website. It'll also be linked in this PowerPoint for you to reference later. But let's go on and dive into the application system now. So I always recommend that applicants access the application through our website. So what you'll need to do is go to the home page. And there's a couple different places and ways that you can access it, but this is the way that I like to direct people to go through. Go to Programs, U.S. Scholars, Core, click. Then you can go down and hit Apply Now. You could also go to Application, Application Login. This is the page I like the best because you can bookmark this page and use this as your spring point for accessing the application. It also has a direct link to a PDF version of step-by-step application instructions, which are extremely useful in helping you fill out your application. So I definitely recommend looking over those if you haven't yet. So let's go to the application. So we're still logged in, which is great. If you weren't logged in, let's see. If you weren't logged in, this would be a page with a lake and mountains on the back of it. If you've previously applied for an award, you can use your same email address and password from previous application cycles. Just be sure, again, to access the application through our website, so that way you're getting connected to the correct URL. So what you'll do is, what will pop up is this one. So this is our tester, so we've got a lot of other applications inside. If you only see this top one, this Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program application closed, then you're not in the right place. You've used the wrong link, an old, outdated link, that's only linking you to the old application, not the new one. So you'll want to make sure that this is popping up. If this pops up, you can either access the application through your name, which will be right here, through this hyperlink, or through the Edit button. So we'll go on and click Edit. And what will pop up are these preliminary questions. All right. Here's the instructions page. There's nothing that is required for you to do on this page. It's just a page of links and helpful resources for you. Program information. So something really important to note on this page, if you are doing a multi-country award, so maybe those EU awards, the Africa Regional Research Award, anything like that, then you would end up choosing that. Let's see. For instance, there will be a space here that will say, like, European Union. And then what you'll need to do is down here select the award and then the type of activity. So when you choose the country, it will immediately pre-populate part of your grant and part of your information. So since we chose the European Union as the country that we're looking to apply to, if you go down here, it only shows you those multi-country European Union options. If you want to go to only Albania, you click Albania. And then this is only going to show you the award opportunities within Albania. So if you aren't seeing an award opportunity down here, go back up here in this section and make sure that you've chosen the right option. Okay, and then so you'll continue to fill out this information. And so one thing that's really nice to know about the application is you can jump around anywhere you'd like in the application while you fill it out. You could start with the program information, go all the way down to project details, and start filling that out. You don't need to start at the beginning and finish all the way at the end. You can save, click the Save and Next button at any point in time, which will save your information from that page. What you will know is that anything with an asterisk, though, if you haven't filled that out, you won't be able to actually submit the application until you go back and correct that. So some things that I've noticed that we get questions about from applicants. One big thing that we get from applicants and from referees is this zip code question. So our application does require a 9-digit zip code. If you do not know your 9-digit zip code and you are located here in the U.S., use this link right here. Your recommenders, when they also need to write their recommendation letter, there's a short personal information form that they also need to fill out. They, too, need to complete the zip code section that does request that they also put in the 9-digit zip code. It's impossible to submit a reference or an application without a 9-digit zip code. Now, a really great question follow-up to that is, what if I'm outside of the country, or what if my referee is located in France or the UK and they don't have 9-digit zip codes? The workaround for that is just adding more zeros. So fill in the first 5 numbers of the zip code and then just put zeros. You shouldn't have any issues submitting after doing that. So let's see if you guys have written any questions about applications so far. Okay. So some people are asking, where do we write the project statement? That's a good question. So if you go up to the application, remember you can always navigate through this. Go to Upload Project Statement. So all of these sections that say uploads in the title are going to be where you're adding attachments. So Upload Project Statement, this is the page. Again, we've got the guidelines added in here for reference. More guidelines, more guidelines. And then at the bottom of the page, you'll see that there's a space for you to attach a project statement. Please attach PDF documents. If you attach a Word document or a JPEG, anything like that, sometimes the files will get corrupted when they convert them to PDFs. So to assure that what you're sending us is exactly what we see, convert all of your attachments to PDFs before submitting them. If you attach a Word document and then it converts to a PDF in the application, and you used Arabic characters or Mandarin, or even use the tilde in Spanish, those will get distorted during that conversion. And so that's a great way to make sure that doesn't happen is by using the PDF and uploading attachments as PDFs versus anything else. All right, let's scroll back up. And so the additional upload section, this is also very important, because you'll notice that there are a couple different things that can be uploaded in this section. The first one being a bibliography. So this is where you would upload your bibliography if that was part of your application. You would also upload your syllabi on the same page in this section, and then a letter of invitation would be uploaded here. Now, good follow-up questions about letters of invitation. If you already submitted your application and received your letter of invitation later on, that's okay. All you need to do is email the program staff for the award that you applied to, and we will upload it to your application. Now, there is no guarantee that letters of invitation can be uploaded to your application after the deadline. However, please be in touch with us if you know that your letter of invitation may be coming a week after the deadline, or even 2 weeks, anything like that. Just keep program staff updated, and we'll try to work with you as much as possible to have your application be its best and get all of those documents loaded into it. So the best thing to do, best practice, is always just keep us informed. We can't help you out if you're not letting us know what the status is of anything for you. Okay. So if we scroll back up and we look at this references section. Now, this is a section where a lot of people seem to always have issues in the application. Either the referees have issues or the applicants do. So like I had mentioned earlier, referees must upload their reference letters through the application system, through Embark. We do not accept email versions of reference letters. We do not accept mailed-in versions of reference letters. They must all submit online. So what you need to do is, like I was saying earlier, if you haven't started an application, you need to do so immediately so that way you can register your references. So registering your references means that you are adding them to the application system so that they can receive the link from the automated email to be able to upload their reference letter to your application. So what's going to happen is you'll type in your name, and what will happen is only these first two blanks will pop up. You'll need to hit this plus sign right here to add that third line, because remember, you must have three, no more, no less, three referees. And so what you'll do is you'll type them in. Okay. And to have them actually receive this, you don't just hit save and next. You actually need to hit this invite recommenders button. Then you can hit save and next. If you don't invite recommenders, then these won't save. We've noticed that with a couple applications as well. And so what you do is hit invite recommenders. The status immediately shows invited. So one of the great features of the application system is that after you submit your application, you still have access to this referee tab. So this stuff will still be active after your application, and you'll have some sort of permission access to be able to change things, add people, maybe even delete people. And so you can check at any point in time. You can see the status of your referees. You don't need to email us and ask if people have submitted or not. You'll be able to actually see it directly on the application. So here you can see the three different options: invited, opened. So open means that they have received it and they have been able to open the link that was given to them. And then submitted, which means that you're done, you're good to go, no more worries. If you need to gently remind a referee, or if a referee has lost the email, or if within the last 2 days we had an issue with the referee link not working in the emails that were being sent out, that's now been fixed. So if you resend them the email using this button right here, it will send them the correct new message, which will send them the correct new link that they will be able to use to access the system. So all you have to do is hit resend, and you'll get this little pop-up that your email has been sent. If you would like to delete a referee, maybe it's getting close to the deadline and you found out that one of your references just isn't going to be able to submit on time, you can remove them and add somebody else. Now, if they've already submitted a reference, you'll have to contact program staff and have them delete the referee if you need to swap in for somebody else, because you won't have that feature here. Right. So let's look and see if you guys have any questions. Okay. Right, so fortunately, I'm not seeing too many technical questions about the application, which means it's a good time for me to just go on and get back to the presentation for you guys. So, really quickly, before we sum up and just start taking having a complete Q&A, the process timeline. So you'll submit in August. Your application will go through a few different rounds of review, some domestic, some international. The international review is the real waiting game. That's when you may find out the status of your application anytime February through May for that final yes or no if you received a Fulbright. And then you'll end up you won't be departing until the fall of the next year for the most part. And so this is basically a full year before you are able to actually go on a Fulbright grant. So just know that it takes a while. We're vetting your application in lots of different ways, having lots of different people look at it with different perspectives. So that way we're really getting a great cohort and group of Fulbrighters every year. If you have any questions about the application timeline or review process, feel free to send us a message. Just know that you're going to have to hold tight for a couple months. It's going to take a while for the review, so just be patient. Okay. Application resources, we've gone through a lot of these today, but this slide is really just here for you as active links for when this is uploaded online, for you to visit later on and to refer to later. Okay, staying connected, you can join my Fulbright to receive any updated information from us. We've got another link to our website, so you can go through, find those application guidelines, links to the application, catalog of awards, all of that. And then also, if you think that anybody would be a good Fulbrighter, a suitable Fulbrighter, you can refer them also on our website online. And so now, I don't want to waste too much more time and really just want to dive into your questions. And that way, you can stop hearing all of my voice, and Aphrodita and I will be able to switch off. So,
Thank you, Mary Rolf.
Yeah.
I'm trying to answer some of the specific questions. So hopefully the applicants, the attendees are able to get the responses, some of the responses. So, just one thing to highlight, we get this question very often about some of the applicants we're aware cannot get a letter of invitation by August 1st deadline. It is highly recommended that you submit the letter of invitation, if required, by the August 1st deadline along with the complete application. However, if still there is some difficulties in getting the letter of recommendation, even though we would not recommend it, we still could accept them after the August 1st deadline. But make sure to indicate this in your application, and also if you have like an email correspondence with the host, then attach that in the meantime. And when you do get the letter of invitation eventually, Mary Rolf, the address that you would recommend for them to send this letter?
So if it is before the application deadline, you can contact the program staff that is attached to the countries that you're looking to apply to, which you'll find in the catalog of awards. If it's after the deadline, the email address is fulbrightscholarreview@iie.org. And if you forget that or didn't have a minute to write it down, that information is also available in the application instructions PDF on our website.
Wonderful. And there's another question, because there are many of the scholars who have had a previous application, Fulbright, or who lived abroad previously. And this is very important for us to know, especially if you've had a Fulbright grant before, and there's no limit to how many grants you can get. But also, if you've lived abroad for some time, then indicate that just as a way of showing us that you can adjust to living abroad, you can adjust to new circumstances, because this is very important also as the peer reviews your application. So it can be in your project statement, because we do have a question about where to indicate that. But also on the application component, there is a list of questions that they ask you about your previous experience abroad. So make sure you also indicate that there.
So
go ahead.
One person was asking, should all reference letters be due by August 1st? Yes. We should receive all reference letters by August 1st. If you foresee that being an issue, please do email us. However, if it's going to be a while before your referee can submit a letter of reference, I would recommend that you find somebody else that can submit by the deadline. Somebody else was also asking about that discrepancy with the 9-digit zip code and having international recommenders, how will they know that they need to submit with zeros for their zip code? That's up to you. So conveying any sort of information about the deadline, the due date, what should be included in a reference letter, that's all up to the applicant to convey to the referee. We're here to help with technical issues. However, it's up to the applicant to speak with the recommenders about what's required of them.
Yeah, and if I can emphasize once again, I know we do get a lot of questions for the letter of invitation, who can issue that. I mean, just to emphasize that any person who has the authority to invite you can issue the letter of invitation, because it is important that if you are selected to go to Fulbright, you need to have a facility, you need to have a computer, a desk, and that person who already issued the letter of invitation will be authorized to give you all the working space, and also can help you in as you settle in if selected. So that's why it's important to talk to the person who has the authority to invite you, and they should issue the letter. Sometimes it's also a person that you are going to work with. Sometimes it's a collaborator. I mean, it's not like a set template for these letters and who writes them, as long as they have the authority to invite you.
Okay. And somebody else was asking, so there's a couple awards that do require you to receive multiple letters of invitation if you have a dual affiliation set up. The easiest way to do that, because there is only one box to be able to upload everything, is to combine those PDFs. So if you have the feature in Adobe to combine the PDFs, that's great. If not, the workaround for that is just to print out the two letters of invitation or three letters of invitation that you've received and then scan them as one document, so that way you have one upload. That's the best way to do that.
So if we can cover, I mean, I know you covered extensively, yeah. Meryl, about the bibliography, but we do have a question about the bibliography and what does that entail. So, you want to cover that just once more before we continue to other questions?
Sure. So bibliographies are a way for you to show us who else is interested or published in this field? What's the discussion about the surrounding the topic that you're proposing? Is it something that relatively little is known, in which case you may have a shorter bibliography? Is it something that a lot of research is known and you can really choose from a breadth of sources? The other part about the bibliography that the peer reviewers and the discipline reviewers are going to be looking for is, who are the people that you're citing for your bibliography and your resources? Are you citing somebody that was back from the 60s whose theories have been totally debunked? We want to make sure that you're as up-to-date as possible with what you're using and who you're going to be citing, and also showing us what's the need in this field for the type of research that you're doing.
And also, just to add to that, that's great, to add to that that it's not meant to be like a biography, your biography, or it should not consist only of your publications. So it should be, sources, like Meryl mentioned, sources reflecting the current state of research or work on your proposed topic. So it can be also annotated or explanatory. So just keep that in mind and hope this answers the question that we have here.
So I do want to say, since it is 3 o'clock, that we're happy to stay on the line to continue answering your questions, since you guys have a lot of really great questions. But for anybody that needs to jump off and head to a meeting or do some other things with the rest of their day, thank you for joining us. And if we didn't get to your question and you do need to sign off, please feel free to email the program staff for the award that you're looking to apply to, and we'll be able to respond to you over the remainder of the week.
But yeah, thank you, Mary Rolfe, and I wish you all the best. Good luck with your applications, and looking forward to receiving your applications. All the best.
All right. So a couple more questions that we have. One person is talking about the language requirement, and it's a little confusing still. And that makes sense. The language requirements vary for each award. So what you'll want to look at, and I'll pull up the awards catalog here, to show you is what you should be doing. So if you go core, and then we'll scroll down to the awards catalog, and we'll pick the first one that pops up, so Albania. So what you'll always want to look at for the language requirements is this section here. So what you'll notice is that for a lot of awards, especially in Eastern Europe, you'll see this phrasing, English is sufficient for teaching, foreign language proficiency sufficient to complete the research project is required. For applicants without local language proficiency, feasibility of conducting the project must be demonstrated in the project statement. That's pretty vague. It's written vague for the purpose of you being able to explain to us what your proficiency is in a language or lack of in the way that you would like to. If you are fluent in a language or if you're a native in a language, you can fill out the self-evaluation. If your project doesn't require you to have language proficiency because maybe you're hiring a translator or everybody in your lab happens to speak English, then that's something that you can just write in your project statement according to this award description. Now, there are some award descriptions that will say, Spanish language fluency required. And for that, then you'll want to make sure you have an external evaluator if you're not a native speaker. If you have further questions or you feel like you might have a different case or scenario concerning the language requirements, please feel free to reach out to us. As far as who can serve as a language evaluator, anybody that's qualified to more or less kind of teach in that language. So if you're at a university, anybody in the Spanish, French, German, Japanese departments can fulfill that language evaluator section. But if it's a lesser known language, you can also have anybody that has that fluency can evaluate you within the field. All right. Let's look at some more questions. All right. How should I highlight prior experience living abroad? So there is a section of the application that asks for your professional and personal trips abroad within the last, I believe, 6 years. That's something that we're using to look for and determine your actual eligibility for the award, since there's only a certain amount of time that you can spend abroad to be actually eligible for a Fulbrighter. That review criteria is in the review criteria section, by the way, of the website. If it's something that you could add in your CV if you'd like to, or you can mention in your project statement, how you convey time before that 6 years, before the time of application, is up to you. Somebody was saying, if I've had a previous Fulbright, do I include that in my time abroad if it's been within the last 6 years? Yes, please do, just because Fulbrights vary in length, and so we'd like to see how long you were there. Right. So again, language proficiency evaluations, those are the requirements for those vary based on award. So let's see. All right, what's the best way to make an approach to have letters of invitation from the European universities? So what you should do, actually, is go to our website on the application guidelines. Again, I love this page. This page is amazing and it's going to be super helpful for you. That's why I keep going back to it. And then go to the letter of invitation section. This link is going to have all kinds of great information for you about how to develop contacts abroad. It's not going to tell you, okay, if you want to go to Albania, contact necessarily this person and this person. However, it's going to give you some tips and tricks and ideas. A lot of times just cold calling, cold emailing the people that you're looking to affiliate with, sending them a CV and sending them your proposed project is a way a lot of people go. It's a good idea to include a grant chart in the project description. That's up to you. So the formatting of the project statement can be open. If you'd like to include some charts, if you'd like to include some pictures, that's okay. Just be cognizant of the fact that you only have 3 to 5 pages to get across a lot of information. And so you don't want to fill your project statement with huge timetables and huge pictures. But if a quick little chart explaining maybe your flex timeline or your timeline, your split in between multiple countries is the best way to convey that information, then that's okay. Should I mention I have a family in the country I want to be a Fulbright scholar in? It's okay to mention if you happen to have family. Do you have to? No. But if that's a personal tie for you and a personal interest in the country, that's okay to add into your project statement. It's okay to be personally motivated as well as professionally motivated to visit a certain country. Does the application for a teaching award ask for a bibliography? No. If you're doing a teaching-only award, you do not need to add a bibliography. Somebody's asking, what's the format for the bibliography? Again, go back to the application guidelines section, click down here, scroll down to select bibliography, and then you can check out the information right here. A lot of times if the information is vague or you feel like maybe your questions aren't necessarily answered, that's because we're leaving the information up to you. What you want to include in your bibliography, what sources you want to include, things like that, that's up to you to decide. Okay. Again, if you're ever having tech issues with your application, please do email us and we'll be able to work with you. There are certain technical issues like references not receiving the correct referee link, or having issues with attachments in your application, things like that. That's something that we can help you as program staff. If you're having issues with resetting your password or you opened the wrong application, those are issues that the Embark tech support will need to help you with. And the email address for them is support@embark.com. But if you are having issues reaching them or anything like that, feel free to email us, and we can also try to work with them on our end as well.
So, Meryl, if we can also highlight the letters of recommendations that we did receive a few questions, whether they should be submitted by the August 1st deadline. So, yes, they should be also submitted by your recommenders, and you will see the status after you have registered them. And Meryl is an expert on this as well. So. She can tell us like the status once you register the recommenders. You can go back and check what is the status, if they have opened it or if they have submitted it, and if they haven't received it, you can resend the link, because it is your responsibility to make sure that they also finish this on time and then submit it by August 1st deadline. Thank you, Meryl.
Of course. Thank you for that note again. So let's see what other questions you guys have. Do recommenders have access to our application, or should we submit everything to them? The referees are not going to see any part of your application, so it's up to you to send them, you know, an updated CV and either your project statement or a description of your project statement, because they will not have access to that information. And so if you'd like them to know about what you're applying to and your qualifications, that'll all be information that you will need to provide them separately. That's a great question.
So again, you mentioned earlier that if we find that there is something missing in our technical review, we will request that information from the applicant. But however, we will not toss out the application, as noted here. We really are trying to work with all the applicants, make sure that they do submit a complete application. So. But in case, you know, you do not have the letter of invitation by August 1st, like worst case scenario, and you do receive it, please, if we haven't reached out, I mean, please reach out to us the minute you receive it, because there will be a certain time we will reach out to you for adding these additional missing components.
Okay. Somebody had a really great question. Can you defer a Fulbright grant? No. Unfortunately, if you receive a Fulbright grant 1 year, you cannot defer it. You will have to reapply again. Somebody else was asking, can I have a nonprofit as my host institution or host organization? That's possible. However, that'll depend on the award that you're looking to apply to. Some awards are open only to having institutional hosts. Some awards are open to NGOs. Some are open to even government affiliations. That information will be in the award description as to whether or not that can be a host. Somebody was asking about spending time in your host country and how important is that. It's going to depend on the region and the country that you're looking to go to. Some countries have a strong preference for no prior experience in the country. Other regions, so Sub-Saharan Africa and the MENA region as a whole, typically may prefer some sort of developing country experience, just so that way they know that you can handle some of the challenges that may come your way. That any preference or non-preference for something like that will be demonstrated in the award description, so just be sure to read that and read all four tabs. It could be on the first two, or it could be on that last country area overview tab, information about that. Somebody's asking about, again, time spent abroad and the timeline. Please do include an in-depth timeline if you have spent a lot of time abroad over the last few years. If we have questions about your eligibility, it'll be something where we will email you and ask you. Especially if you're close to having lived 5 out of the last 6 years abroad. We'll likely email you and ask for a more detailed breakdown of the time that you've spent.
We have a great question for artist projects. What is suggested for the syllabi section? So if you're applying to a teaching award in the arts, for example, there is an award in Ireland, it's about visual arts, and this is for teaching and research. And this is, again, you follow the instructions for what is needed for the research. If it's research only, you don't need to provide us a syllabi. If it's a combination of both teaching and research, then you need to provide a syllabi and the bibliography. So just, you know, follow the instructions are the same no matter the discipline and what is needed for the syllabi, basically something that you used in the U.S. Just to demonstrate your teaching methodology, your experience. If you have used this syllabi in the U.S. previously in your teaching here, then just indicate that. If it's a new syllabi that you're just compiling, drafting for this new award, indicate that as well. But it's definitely something that you will create. So, because there was a question earlier that whether they can use a syllabi from the host institution. It's definitely that something that you can check with the host institution. It's something you need to draft. You need to tailor that according to their needs, and it's your project, your work. However, just follow the instructions, and as Meryl indicated, the application guidelines will show you everything step by step what you need to do to compile them.
Okay. I think we have time for just a couple more questions. And then, again, if we don't answer your question today, please feel free to write the program staff for the award that you're applying to, and we'll try to get back to you as quickly as possible. Just know that, like, it's a busy time for you guys applying before the August 1st grant. It's also a busy time for us over here answering all of your inquiries. So there may just be a little bit of a lag in between when you've written us or left us a voicemail and when we'll be able to get back to you. But we promise you we are working hard to answer all of your questions every day.
Yes, thanks for emphasizing that. And also I appreciate all the patience you have. And I know you can make this. This is like a week away, but this is we appreciate your interest and enthusiasm, and also like meeting the main Fulbright goal, which is building bridges, building mutual understanding, and making this world a better place.
So somebody had a good question. If an award says teaching / research as the grant activity, does that mean I get to choose teaching or research, or do you do both? So if the award says teaching / research and nothing else is listed, then that means you must complete both types of grant activity. If the grant activity is different and that you could do a teaching-only project or a research-only project, it'll be listed as research, teaching / research. So that's how to decode that. All right, if you've been invited to two different countries, how do you determine which country you'll be most successful in? You will be most successful in whichever grant you have a stronger application for. It won't be determined by application numbers. It's going to be which location and which project do you have a more compelling argument for? Why do you need to go to that country, and why under that specific award? It won't have anything to do with how many people have applied to that award. So write and apply to the project that speaks to you the most. Because we can tell when we read your applications what your heart is in, and then what you're just applying to get around the numbers.
Okay, let's see. So again, another question about reference letters, if they should be on a university letterhead. Not necessarily.
Technically no, but does it look nicer? Yeah. If possible, that's great. The letters of invitation, though, should definitely be on university letterhead.
Yeah.
Let's see. Does having previous relationship with a host institution strengthen my application? Yeah. So if you're looking to affiliate with somebody that you have affiliated with in the past, then the chances are you may be able to get a stronger letter of invitation. The more detailed your letter of invitation is, the stronger a case is going to be built for you, for why your project would be successful and why you're needed on a Fulbright over there. That being said, you don't have to have prior collaborations with a host to receive a letter of invitation or to affiliate with them. Okay, so I think we've gone through a lot of your questions today. If you have any further questions, again, and we didn't get to them, please write to us. I think we are going to sign off and send you the best of luck with continuing to fill out your application. And we look forward to seeing it from the August 1st deadline. Thanks for joining, everybody.
Thank you. Have a nice day. Bye.